Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo sound. This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the Linux Action Show, Season 15, Episode 5. My name is Chris, and the B-Man's out, and it's Super Bowl Sunday, and that means two things for Linux Action Show, not a normal show. Instead, I'm going to do sort of a tips and tutorial show. I don't know how you guys are going to like this, but kind of think of it as an old classic in-depth look. If you're sort of a long-time Jupiter Broadcasting viewer, you might remember those in-depth look series I did. Well, kind of think of this as one of those. We're going to do two things. Up front, I'm going to show you my new favorite transcoder for Linux to convert video from pretty much any format to pretty much any other format. And I thought, you know, a couple episodes ago, we hated a little bit on WebM. And I thought, let's take an opportunity to show you how you can use open source software on a Linux desktop to convert pretty much any video, like a Flash video, an MPEG-4, anything like that, to a WebM or OGG Theora video. I don't think we talk about that enough because those, for Linux users, if you are on a Linux ecosystem, I don't really see any main issue with running using WebM or OGG Theora as your primary format. And where I'm always talking about it on the show from the standpoint of, you know, a content producer and distributor, and how I've talked about H.264 from that angle. But as an end user, I can totally see the value in it, and so I want to talk about that today. And now in the second half of the show, I talked about it a couple of times, and we're going to have it coming up. It's Alan. You remember Alan from a few episodes back. He's got some pretty hardcore BSD tutorials that he's recorded for us, and I'm going to include that in the second half of the show. So you'll get a little bit of that, and you'll get the transcoding stuff. But first, I wanted to give you an update about Brian, because I'm sure a lot of you are wondering how he is doing and how's the wife doing. And he did have the wife. Trust me, as far as I know, I'm not positive. I didn't witness anything. But as far as I know, Brian didn't have the baby. I could double check on that. I'm sure. There's probably some way I could find out. But as far as I know, his wife had the baby, and she's doing great. It was a 9-pound girl, and I think they're all pretty much resting comfortably right now and recovering. So hopefully they'll be able to enjoy Super Bowl Sunday and relax and recoup. And I can't think of a better way to do that as a new family. So congrats to them. And hopefully we'll see him back here on the show very soon. But if not, we'll keep chugging quite right along. Why don't we jump into I don't butcher it, but I'm going to call it Arista Transcoder. And I really dig this. So here's the basic UI if you're watching the video version. If not, I'll try to walk you through it too, so hopefully you'll still get some value out of this. Now, I thought, let's start with something that maybe somebody'd want to do. You take a video that, say, we've released, like Jupiter at Night. Let's say you go into Arista, you start it up, and I think you'll be able to find this in most of your distributions repositories. If not, you can go over to their website, which is, I think it's actually a pretty, this is a great website. It's transcoder.org. So if you don't have it in your repo, just head over to transcoder.org. By the way, I just brought their website up here, and I'm using Firefox 4, and I'm thinking about doing a special on Firefox 4. There's a few things that, some thoughts I have about Firefox 4, and I don't know if that's too far out the normal. I mean, it'd be Firefox 4 under Linux, but if you guys are interested in a Firefox 4 review or some of my takes or some ways to use it effectively, I've been kind of experimenting with different stuff with it, and in combination with my Android phone and the mobile Firefox 4 browser for Android. If you guys would like to hear my thoughts on that, let me know in the comments. Otherwise, I might just keep it for like a live stream discussion or something. But all right, back to Arista Transcoder. I see I'm a little ADD sometimes. I apologize. Back to the Arista Transcoder. So say you downloaded, let's just say you went over to Jupiter Broadcasting and you got the latest episode of Jupiter at Night. Once you fire up Arista, you go into here and say you want to choose the file. By default, it's actually going to start from your DVD drive. And I think this has been a point of confusion for a lot of people. Like Bilbo in the chat room, he had asked me, what's the difference between this and, say, using Handbrake? And my take on Handbrake is, one, Handbrake is a great tool for backing up optical media to either an MKV file with maybe like an OGG Theora video codec or an H.264 file with an MP4 container. It's good for backing up optical media. It's also pretty good for transcoding a lot of different types of files to a different type of file. I don't think it's as good as converting all different types of files you might come across ever to any other type of file that you might want. And I think that's where Arista is a little bit stronger. Well, a lot stronger. For example, you could download a Flash video, I don't know, off YouTube, but wherever you got a Flash video, and run it through Arista right to WebM. And Handbrake doesn't even offer the option to go to WebM. So there's definitely some advantages to Arista, but I'm also a huge Handbrake fan. In fact, about a year ago, I did a video on it. You can find it on YouTube if you want to see more about that for backing up DVDs and things like that. But Arista here, if you go in here, you can say, go change your source from the DVD drive, which will be the default, to choose a file. And then you can go find a file on your file system, and we'll look at that right here. I just happen to have the latest episode of Jupiter at Night. So then you say open, and this is the gotcha. Your device preselects are what throw you off with Arista, in my opinion. And this is where I got a little lost. So you go in here and say, if your device you have selected is the Apple iPad, your presets are normal and low. And if I go in here and I say choose let's choose an Android phone. You can do iPhone presets, but let's choose an Android preset. I go in here, my presets are Droid X, Samsung Galaxy S. That's cool. I mean, at least I know it's going to work on that device if that's the device I have. So I see how that's good information. But what that doesn't tell you is it an H.264 file? Is it an MP3 audio codec? Is it an AUG file? What is that file if I make it for the Galaxy S? So you have to kind of work around that a little bit in Arista. And what I found the trick is choose your device as web. Even if you're making it for, say, an Android Gingerbread phone that could do WebM, say your destination is a web browser. Once you choose your device as a web browser, you get the presets of WebM, Flash Video, or H.264. Well, that's a pretty good selection right there. That's probably going to cover your bases. Now, for this example, we want to choose WebM. So I just go ahead and choose WebM, and it's going to bring the format. It's going to bring over the essential resolution. I don't know about the bit rate because it doesn't give you that kind of information, but it'll move over it won't scale the image. It'll move over the image size, and it generally looks to be a lower bit rate image, but the idea is you're trying to distribute the file too. Once you've done that, you just add to queue and choose your output location, and it goes. And as the add to queue implies, you can do multiple files. And then you could just sit there and chew through a batch. So what I decided to do as an experiment to see how this would work is I threw a batch of backed up copies of Star Trek in there and shot them over to WebM. And it just, honestly, I have concerns about the overall length of time it takes to encode WebM video. And depending on what you're coming from, it can take even longer if it has to really work to decode it. But I just let it go on a dual-core 2 gigahertz processor probably overnight, and it got 4 episodes converted for me. So, you know, I mean, that's... I don't know how to put that into an actual time count, but I know that that's something that I can fit into my routine and schedule. I don't have to know that it was 4 hours. I just need to know that it's something I can fit in a night while I'm sleeping. So for that purposes, it really does do the job. And I'd be really interested to know what other tools other folks out there might be using to make WebM videos. As you might suspect, I've been researching how to produce and release content for Jupiter Broadcasting in WebM when the web audience is demanding that, because I want to be able to do it, and I don't want to just be figuring out when everybody's expecting it. So I want to kind of start experimenting now, and that's how I came across Arista, and I've come across a few other tools, but I honestly have not found anything great. So if you know of a good tool, I know I could use FFmpeg, FFmpeg on the command line if I wanted to. I'm trying to avoid that. I want something that does a queue that I can stack up, go, you know, that kind of stuff. That would be nice. Speaking of things that are nice, this episode of the Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. Now, if you are at GoDaddy.com yourself, maybe you're listening to the audio version, or if you happen to be watching the video version, you might see that they say new.coms are $11.99. Now, isn't that interesting? Tell you what, we have the Super Bowl hookup from GoDaddy. If you use the promo code LinuxC0, now this is a new one. You add CO, LinuxCO at checkout, your .com will be $7.49 for the first year. So you get a couple of bucks off. So if you've got some sort of brilliant blog idea or something like that that strikes you during the Super Bowl, use our code LinuxC0 to go over there and get that .com for $7.49 or a .co. Now, because it is kind of cheap, it's a Super Bowl thing, so it's only going to be for the week after the show releases. So if you're not jumping on this buy, I would say probably Saturday the 12th, you might be out of luck. It's a limited time offer. LinuxCO at GoDaddy.com when you check out. And thanks to GoDaddy. And if you're listening or watching after that, you can use our promo code Linux just to save 10% right then and there. And that's not so bad either. Thanks to GoDaddy for sponsoring this episode of the Linux Action Show. Okay, well, that's all I have for you for the first tutorial. Like I said, I'd love to hear your ideas for how we could create WebM video and maybe how you're doing it now and what encoders you've been using under Linux. I will give you a quick disclaimer. Last episode, we reviewed KDE 4.6, and I first tried to set up Arista under KDE 4.6 on Kubuntu, and when I tried to run Arista, I got all kinds of GTK errors. So working under Mint 10 with GNOME, so I don't know if you're KDE users, you might have some problems with that, or it might have just been I was just missing a package that for some reason didn't make it in the dependencies. I went ahead and I've had no problems under GNOME desktops. That's normally what I run. So that might just be one disclaimer for KDE users. I don't think that's a big problem because it's a pretty popular app now, and I think I probably would have seen that somewhere else. But I did want to put that out there, just a disclaimer as part of my review. All right. Now I'm going to throw it over to Alan for his BSD tips.
Welcome to another Study BSD tutorial produced in association with the Linux Action Show and Jupiter Broadcasting. Hi, I'm your host, CompSci professor and Unix consultant Alan Jude. In this week's episode, we'll be walking you through installing FreeBSD and configuring a desktop environment. On last week's episode of LAS, I was on and we talked about BSD for quite a bit, and a lot of people were interested but weren't sure where to start. So I'm going to walk you through building a functional desktop with BSD. So the first step to doing an install is booting off the disk. In this case, I'm using the DVD image because it has all the packages on a single disk. If you use the CDs to do the full desktop, you'll need all three CDs, but if you're doing the text only, you'll only need the first CD. So we'll choose United States for our language, and now we're at the main menu. In this case, we're going to use the recommended option and do a standard install. So at the next menu, we'll have our FDisk-style partitioning system. BSD's partitioning is actually a two-step process. You create a partition, which BSD will call a slice, and then later you'll subdivide that into actual BSD partitions, which will be your mount points. When you start the FDisk manager, you'll see that you have your space, but it's shown in sectors, which isn't a very useful measurement. So if we press the Z key, we can toggle the size units to kilobytes, megabytes, or gigabytes. And then we can press C to create a slice. We do that, and then we can enter our size in convenient units, like 10G for gigabytes. And then we choose our partition type, 165 for BSD, so we'll use that. And now we see we have our two 10-gigabyte partitions, one used for BSD and one left over as unused space. In this case, we're not dual booting or anything, so we don't need to partition the drive. So instead, we'll delete that and choose the option A, use the entire disk. So then we press Q to advance. The next step is to choose a boot manager. If you already have one like Grub and you want to keep that, you'll choose the None option, and that'll not touch your master boot record, and then you can go to Grub and configure it to launch FreeBSD for you. If you have multiple operating systems and you want to use the BSD boot manager, you will choose this option. What this will do is offer, during boot up, each of your F keys will be mapped to a different partition on your disk. So F1 might start FreeBSD, and F2 starts Linux, and F3 starts Windows. It also offers the option to switch to a second disk. If your BIOS doesn't let you choose which disk is primary, it'll let you do that. Also, it allows you the option to boot from your network in case that's disabled for whatever reason or not accessible. Or standard. With standard, it just starts FreeBSD right away. In our case, we only have the one operating system, so that's the option we want. Now is phase two of the partitioning. We'll take that 20 gigabyte partition we created earlier and actually divide that into our file systems. You can, again, you can create them manually, but what I recommend is you press A for the automatic defaults. These will lay out your file system in the way that's going to work best for BSD. It creates a 512 megabyte partition for slash. This is where your kernel, your bootloader, and the etc file system will exist. They won't need that much much more space than that, so it's a good amount. Your swap will be twice the amount of physical memory you have, unless you have over 4 gigabytes, where then it'll scale back, depending on how much you have. Slash var will be about 10% of your disk. You can adjust that if you need. Slash TMP will be, again, another 512 megabytes. And then slash USR will be the remainder of your space, because FreeBSD itself will be installed there. All your packages and your home directory all reside under slash USR. If you don't need to make any changes here, we can press Q to advance. The next step is to choose which distribution sets you're going to install. You can choose a minimum install, which will only install the very minimum to get the operating system working, but we want a little bit more than that. The user will install the average user's requirements, the full binaries for the operating system and the documentation. This is what most people will need. However, if you're going to be building a package that requires a kernel module, such as VirtualBox itself, you're going to want the kern developer set, which includes the full source code for the kernel. Or if you're going to be hacking on the operating system itself, or trying out the latest new version or whatever, then you can choose the developer option, which installs the full source code for the entire operating system, the binaries, and the docs. So we'll choose user by pressing spacebar to put a little X in the box. Because the user set includes documentation, we now select which language worth of documentation we would like. You can choose multiple if you need them, but I only need English. So I'll tab to the OK. Next, we have to choose whether we'd like to install the ports collection. The ports collection is 20,000 applications that have been ported to BSD and are ready to install, being built from source. The advantage here is over a binary package is that you get to configure all the options and you get the latest package, the latest version of the application much sooner. But you still have the option of installing binary packages. We're not going to install ports today because, as I'll explain in a future episode, you want a newer version of the port tree than the one that comes on the disk. Now that we've selected the distribution, we can tab over to the OK button and continue. The next step is to choose where we'd like to get our installation from. I have the DVD image in this case, so I'll use that. However, if you're constrained for bandwidth, what you can do is download a very small net install image and then install, get the parts of BSD that you need, only the parts that you choose to install, from an FTP server instead. And this is faster and uses less bandwidth. However, if you're installing on multiple machines or going to be doing the install a number of times, the DVD has advantages. Now is your last chance to cancel. Basically, nothing we've done so far has actually been committed to the disk. So once we choose yes, it will create the partitions like we laid out, and then format them with the UFS2 file system. So we'll choose that, and that's done now. Now it'll begin extracting FreeBSD to your disk. It'll install the base of the operating system, the kernel, the documentation, and the man pages. And that's the entire operating system. Unlike Linux, which is three separate parts, you have the Linux kernel, the GNU user land, and then a distribution that packages a bunch of things together. With FreeBSD, it's an entire operating system. So you get the kernel, the user land, and the basic tools for the operating system as one set. And that gets installed. By default, it does not install any third-party packages. However, during the install, we'll have the option to choose some third-party packages to install. So right now, it's installing the documentation. And once it's done that, it'll do the man pages. And then our operating system will be completely installed. And then we'll have to do some basic configuration of our system so that we can finish the install and have a fully functional operating system at the end. So now we've completely installed FreeBSD. All we have to do is tune it and add the packages. So we're going to configure our Ethernet adapter now, so we'll say yes. We don't have IPv6, so we'll say no, but we do have DHCP. It'll now scan for DHCP servers and get our IP address and other network configuration. Now we can assign our machine a host name and a domain name. And then tab to the OK button. Next, you have the option to have your machine act as a network gateway. If you have multiple network cards, what this will do is actually make the machine a router between those networks. We don't need that because this is a virtual machine, so we'll say no. Next, we have the option to enable INetD. This is a super server that will enable basic services like FTP and IDENT and many others, but we don't need those, so we'll choose no. We do, however, want SSH, because everybody needs SSH. We don't want this to act as an anonymous FTP server, but that is an option. You can also choose whether you want to be an NFS server or an NFS client. You can configure your customize your console settings, but we won't need that. And lastly, you need to set your time zone. An important question is whether your machine's CMOS clock is in universal time or in local time. For physical hardware, it's most likely in local time. However, for a virtual machine, it depends on which virtualizer you're using, which option. If you're not sure, you should choose no. You can always adjust it after. So now we're going to choose our region. I'm in North America and Canada. And then we choose our time zone, Eastern Time. Next, we have the option to enable a mouse. So we'll choose yes, go down to enable, and now if we move our mouse around, we can see, yes, our mouse is working. So then we can go to exit. The FreeBSD package collection allows us to install software. In this case, we do want to do that, so we'll say yes. And then we're presented with the list of categories of software we might want to install. In this case, we want to install Xorg and KDE. So we'll choose KDE 4 and the latest Xorg in here. They're in alphabetical order. There it is. Xorg 7.4. Then tab to the OK button. We can also choose to install other software. For example, we want sudo. So we'll go under Security and select sudo. Once you've finished selecting the software you'd like, you tab to the Install button. It then presents you with a list of the software you selected, and then you confirm that, and it begins installing that software. This process is going to take about 10 or so minutes, so I'm going to stop the recording here and pick it up again once that's done. Okay, and so now KDE and X are now installed. So we're ready to finish the configuration for FreeBSD. So once you've selected all the packages and installed them, you have to create some initial user accounts. You don't want to be using root for everything, so you want to add an extra user or two. So we'll say yes, and we'll add a new user. I'll make a user called Alan, set a password, set my name. With BSD, you also have a special group called Wheel. With GID 0. If you're not in the wheel group, you're not able to use SU to switch to root, even if you know the password. So in order to be able to switch to the root user, you want to make sure all your administrator users are in the group wheel. And I'll also change my default shell, because by default, BSD uses SH, not bash, but actual SH. And you don't have arrow keys and buffers and so on. That's the only user I need for now, so I'll choose exit. And the last step is to set your root password. Now that you've done that, you have the option to go back to the general configuration menu. Here you can choose to install extra distributions if you decide that you need the source code now, more documentation, other packages if you decide you need those. You can repartition your disk, add more users, change your time zone, and so on. And you can always get back to this once you have BSD installed by running sysinstall. So we're done, so we'll go up to the exit menu at the top, and finally we'll choose exit install at the bottom. Are you sure you wish to exit the system or review? Yes. And now we want to make sure we remove our media, otherwise it'll boot off the media again. And now the system will reboot. So once the system starts up, we see we have the options to boot normally with ACPI disabled, in safe mode, single user mode, or with verbose logging. Or we have the option to drop to the bootloader and enter commands manually. Now the system will scan through your hardware and start up, and we get our login prompt. So we'll log in as root. BSD doesn't start the graphical user interface by default, and we need to do a couple of small changes first anyway. So we're going to run xorg minus configure to set up our video card. We'll then copy /root/xorg.conf.new to /etc/x11/xorg.conf. We also have to enable some services. So if we run EE, the Easy Editor, or VI, on etcrc.conf, we need to enable two services. HALD, the hardware abstraction layer, _enable equals yes, and dbus, _enable equals yes. These provide the hardware support for adding and removing devices and so on. So then we save. The last thing we want to do is we want KDE to start automatically. So we will edit the file /etc/ttys. This controls our virtual terminals. In here we can see our existing terminals, the console at ttyv0, our virtual terminals, ttyv12345678, and finally our graphical interface. Right now we see the graphical interface is set to off. We want to switch it to be KDE. So we'll make it kde4/bin/kdm instead of xdm, and we'll change the off to on. So user local kde4 bin kdm. That's the path to the KDE desktop manager. So we'll save that. And now if we reboot, our system should start and launch KDE automatically. This will give us a graphical login prompt instead of the text-based one. And there we have it. So if we log in as our regular user, KDE will start up and we'll be at our regular desktop interface. And here we go. Got a couple of notifications here, but we're good to go. We have our K menu, and we can see we have all the applications that come with KDE by default, including the full KDE Office suite, some internet browsers and other tools, and so on. And we can get a terminal and see our services are running and so on. So that's how you get KDE. And then in next week's episode, we'll talk about using the ports and packages system to add more software. Maybe we'll install Firefox with Flash and everything. So stay tuned for next week's episode. So that's all for this week, and remember, Unix was not designed to stop you from doing something stupid, as that would also stop you from doing something clever.
Thanks, Alan, for recording the BSD tips, and I look forward to further tutorials from you, and I hope you guys out there enjoyed that. I know BSD is not our normal thing, but we got a lot of positive feedback. I mean, I was probably... I gotta say, it's been a year since we've got an episode with that much feedback. How interested you guys were. And I didn't expect it because I thought there would be a prejudice there. But I should have known better. It's fun, right? And I like to experiment and try different things with PSD, but I often find a lot of advantages to Linux, and I always end up staying with Linux. But it's great to see trying to solve the same problem from a different standpoint, from a group you can at least understand their rationale. And what I mean by that is, when you watch like some of the decisions that Apple makes or Nokia makes or Microsoft makes with their product lines, you think, I don't understand why you're doing that. I don't want that as a customer. I don't know what problem you're trying to solve. You just are trying to increase market share. You're just trying to force me into doing something. But you know, on Linux, that whole process is completely transparent from the bottom all the way up, because you can see everything from the actual source code to the conversations on the mailing list on how the application, while the application was being created, because they're archived on the internet forever. So the entire top-to-bottom process of open source development is always completely transparent. So the motivation and, well, at least hopefully the intent behind something is generally well understood, or at least easily obtainable to be understood. And I feel like even though BSD has a different answer for the problem of, you know, server workloads or desktops or whatever it is, and their answer doesn't quite solve my particular question, I could see the logic and the rationale behind it, enjoy sort of thinking at it from that angle and experiencing it for a while. And I think a lot of you will too. And hopefully if you follow Alan's BSD tips, and maybe if you get a chance to download something like FreeBSD or PCBSD, experiment with it and let me know. A lot of you wrote in and said you're starting to do that and you're really enjoying it. So I think a lot more of you would if you try that too. We're gonna roll a couple more of these. If Brian's out for a little bit, I still want to bring you something every week. And Alan has offered to help with that, and there's been a ton of great responses. So I think we'll do maybe a couple more of those as long as Alan's up for it. So a huge thanks to Alan for putting that together, and a big thanks to you for tuning into this episode. Now, the Linux Action Show is out every Sunday over at JupiterBroadcasting.com, and I hope to see you right back here next week.